Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox, and I haven't got a character that I'm playing because this is a GM-less game. Took me a moment to realise, though. I'm going to ask the other players to introduce themselves in alphabetical order by first name.
Hello, I'm Becky Anderson. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm very excited to be playing Lovecraft-esque tonight.
Hi, my name's Edwin. My pronouns are he, him, and I am also very excited to play Lovecraft-esque.
Hi folks, I'm Nick Bate. My pronouns are he, him, and I will definitely at least once be playing Jonathan Cochran tonight.
Yeah. All remembered.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining us. My name's Sue Elliott, and my pronouns are she, her.
I also have pronouns, by the way. I totally remember how to do all this stuff. Mine are he, him. I'm now going to put in place some rule cards. These are rules that are in play until such time as the card is discarded. So the first one is the Creeping Horror rule. And that rule says that anything supernatural or bizarre may only be encountered at one remove through stories or rumour, traces, distant noises, etc. It also says that direct accounts of supernatural or bizarre events must be from a source that can be doubted or dismissed. It must be possible to rationalise as normal anything the main character sees, and the main character may not acknowledge the possibility of the supernatural. Okay? That rule will eventually disappear. Spoiler alert, but for the first part of the game, that is a rule. We also have the human safety rule. Nobody can describe physical or psychological harm being inflicted on humans, nor any evidence of this. And nobody can describe attempted deliberate harm to the witness, such as a trap or attack. Sorry, to the main character, I should say. I'll just mention briefly that if anyone has special card in their hands, it may allow you to break these rules. If so, it will say so on the card. Third rule is the isolation rule. So we're not going to show our cards to each other. We're not going to discuss the direction the story is going. And the narrator may ask for input from the whisperers, which I'll come to in a moment. But apart from this, do not share ideas for clues or other story elements. And finally, new to Lovecraft-esque 2e, we have the risk rule, which we don't particularly need to all know the details of, but in brief, in scenes, anyone may ask for a risk check if they think there's a risk to the witness, and then this will trigger a round of suggestions which may lead to something horrible happening to the witness.
This is the new bit.
It's a new bit.
Yeah.
So those are the four rules that are in play at the start of the game. And I think we're now ready to have our first scene, if I'm not mistaken. The first player role continues to rotate, so that means that, Ed, you have the privilege of creating the first clue. Lucky you.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it has to be my... If I've got a clue, I've got to use the clue. All right?
Yeah, that's right. I've forgotten an additional rule, which is the roles rule. And that is simply that... So you're going to be narrator for the first scene, Ed, and for anyone who might have forgotten the details of how this works, there are three role cards on the screen here. We've got the narrator card, which basically is the person who acts like GM for the scene and creates a clue during the scene for the main character to discover. We've got the witness, who plays the main character and describes their behaviour and follows the clues, and the whisperers, who's everybody else, and can drip in texture, colour and atmosphere through added description to what the narrator says. They're responsible for watching out for the risk rule being triggered, and you can also, narrator, you can ask the whisperers questions for them to make up an answer to, or ask them to play secondary characters. And because we're going alphabetically, the witness will be me. Huh, me.
So just to clarify what you're saying, I've got a clue card and I've got a special card. Can I use either card as my clue, or can I use anything as a clue and those are just a guide, or just the clue card as the clue? And will I get more clues?
You are allowed... In fact, I will read this out of the rules guide. So we're going to start with five investigation chapters. These will be in part one, and at the end of part one, the rules will change in some interesting ways. In brief, making it a bit more horrific and a bit less brooding. So in each investigation chapter, we'll play through a scene in which the witness discovers a strange clue. Other stuff can happen, but that's the core of the scene, is finding this clue. The clue must follow the clue rule, which is that you can either play a card from your hand and base a clue off it, that should be a clue card, or choose an existing clue and reveal something new but related to that clue. So since you have implied that you only have one clue card, it looks like you have very little choice about which card you will use. But you can also play your special card if you would like to, and if the card permits you to, the rules of when you can play that will be written on the card. Does that help?
Yes. So I could play a clue and a special card if I can kind of work them into one neat thing.
Think of a way to do it, yeah.
Or if somebody else is narrating, can I play my special card if it seems to fit with where they're going with their scene?
I don't know what your special card says. It will say whether you can play it when you're a narrator or whether you can play it any time. Or it should do anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Phew.
Okay, so you're ready for your scene.
Right, just a minute, I've just got to get into character. So I'm Jonathan Cochrane, the youngest son with an inferiority complex and currently under a cloud of scandal staying at a spa. Great, okay, I know who I am.
Okay, so I guess you're allowed to come and go as you please, given that you're massively wealthy and paying for the privilege of being in a health spa. So,
yes, although I feel somewhat trapped here, don't I? So that's a bit of an oddity.
Yeah, so I guess you can come and go as you please within the bounds of Whitby.
Who's going to stop me leaving Whitby? I must not have a car. Oh, there are no cars. We established that earlier. I must not have a horse.
I guess, well, is there a rail? There would be a railway line, but I suppose there's a sort of weird level of sort of social conditioning that if you showed your face in London, the punishment would be worse than this?
Surely there could be more than that.
Yes, my father might withdraw my privileges and allowance and things like that.
There might be like a daily phone call that your father makes to the spa to make sure you're still there or something. Or
yeah. I suppose the implied question that I was asking was, do I have a chaperone? But it sounds like we're saying, nah, not necessary.
No, I don't think so, but maybe there's an implied, like, you know, you've got to stick to certain rules that are not necessarily clear. Otherwise, you know, we might have to keep you in the spa.
Righto. So anyway.
So you are on the docks with Davy.
Ah.
Precariously getting into a rowing boat because you have paid him to take you over to the lighthouse for a spot of fishing, which you are keen on.
I am keen on fishing.
You were enthusiastic a few years about fishing and you got all the equipment. And
now is my opportunity to take it up again.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You got distracted by something and forgot that you liked fishing.
No, quite to the contrary. I was not distracted at all. I simply chose to step away from fishing for a time, knowing that at some point the opportunity would arise to test out my skills again. And now that day has come.
Does somebody want to play Davy, or do you want me to play Davy? I'm just trying to...
I think it depends, Ed, on whether Davy's going to be a key character for delivering clues, or whether they're just going to stand there and sort of be all Davy-ish at me.
What are you saying? Are you saying that the rest of the group couldn't become dynamic Davies?
I'm saying, are they window dressing or are they courtier scene? Because you shouldn't ask someone to play the character if they...
Courtier scene. Let's see how it goes. I'll play Davy then.
All right.
Let's remind ourselves about Davy. He's organised, reliable and hardworking. Okay, so I think you step into the boat and he probably carries all of the bait and boxes and lunch and all the other bits that are required while you get yourself comfortable.
Here you are. There, could you just take that? There's a good fellow. It's just a little slippery here. It's a challenge to... Just a moment. As I'm trying to get off the side of the harbour into the boat, I think my leg will just sort of slip out from under me a bit and I'll end up kind of sprawling a bit in the boat and end up on my arse. Oh, damn, blast it!
You'll get your sea legs soon enough, sir.
Yes, well, I'm quite capable of just brushing myself down. Quite capable of managing on a boat. This isn't the first time I've been in a boat, of course.
Of course, I can see that.
I used to go sailing all the time back in the day.
Yes, yes, I can see that. You have sea legs. Do you mind untying that rope, sir, as he gets the oars out?
Of course, yes. No trouble at all. In fact, I think that Jonathan does know how to untie and tie difficult ropes. That's one of the things that he does remember from his time in the Scouts. So he swiftly undoes the knot.
See, it's coming back to you already, sir.
Certainly is. I've been looking forward to this all day, I must say. Bracing sea air, sound of the birds calling over the harbour. Ah, what could be better?
Yeah, so I think he's sort of rowing out of the harbour, and you sort of, as you sort of leave the sort of protection of the sort of harbour walls, you suddenly, the boat starts sort of, there's sloshing sea here and there, and I think the cries of the birds get sort of louder, and yeah, it just becomes a bit more, you know, wild.
So just as a reminder, Whisperers, you are encouraged to add to Ed's description. Ed will attempt to pause periodically to give you the opportunity to do that. It's just an opportunity to build up atmosphere and so forth.
So it becomes choppy, and Dave at this point sort of, he does say, so why did you choose to fish at the lighthouse? You could have stayed on the dock.
Oh, well, that's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that. I was walking along the harbour yesterday, and I spotted that lighthouse, and I understand this is the old lighthouse. We've got the new lighthouse over here. I gestures to the new lighthouse, and there's the old lighthouse. And what I thought was, that must be a good spot from a perspective of wind and wave, otherwise the lighthouse wouldn't be there, I thought. And I thought to myself, it's probably quite quiet. And with the number of people bustling around the harbour, you know, fish likely to be scared off. So that was my reasoning. Why? Do you know of a better place?
No, it's just tricky to land, and it's unusual. Only the best fishermen go there, I believe.
Well, I'm certainly not going to change that rule, but you seem like the sort of fellow who could quite easily manage to land a boat in difficult circumstances.
He just sort of silently nods when you're at that point. So, yeah, so he rows round the sort of coast, and there's sort of these big sort of you're kind of near the cliffs, and I guess it's sort of the curve of the cliff kind of arches up. I don't know Whitby, so I'm assuming there's cliffs. So there are cliffs in my Whitby, which gives you time to sort of take in the sort of the imposing dark rocks of the cliff face, and get a closer look at the seabirds that are sort of roosting on the little shelves above, which are also covered in bird shit, for the want of a better term. What's the term for bat
poo? Guano.
Is it bird guano? No. Yeah, so you nestle into the cliff face, which sort of steadies the water, and he rows slowly into this sort of back kind of alcove that he knows.
I think that this area has a slightly unusual concentration of a rare type of seaweed, and as you start to lift the oars up out of the water, they are absolutely dragged down with a thick, black, oily-looking seaweed, which must be something unique to the area, but is absolutely horrible.
Awesome. Okay, so Davey sort of wrestles with the seaweed. He doesn't look hugely happy with that, like it's sort of telling him something that you don't know. And he gives the one oar a final shove to get you close enough to the rocks to kind of butt the boat against the rocks, which are also covered in a thick, slippery mat of seaweed, which you're going to have to negotiate.
Well, I think Jonathan is feeling like he needs to sort of demonstrate that he doesn't fall on his arse every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So he's going to attempt to leap like a young gazelle onto the top of the rocks where the seaweed is less thick.
Okay.
No one's calling for a risk check, so I feel safe. And therefore, I think he just manages to pull this feat off. There's a moment where he sort of hands up. Is he going to fall in the water like a complete arse? And steadies himself and then puts his hands on his hips and sort of looks over to the lighthouse, but in a slightly posy way.
Yeah, I should have tried to risk roll. That would have been...
I don't know that you... Okay, anyone can call for it, can't they? So yeah, you just done. But you didn't. Ha-ha!
Just gave it enough time for me to not remember. But I will next time, whatever it is.
I'll be more careful next time.
So Davy throws the ropes to you.
Oh, yeah. Grabs them ably and look around to see if there's anything good to tie it onto.
I think there are probably some of these, like there's some metal rings that have just been sort of...
banged into the rock.
Banged into sort of rugged bits of rock, right? And just as you loop the knots in, you hear like the sound of sort of playful seals off in the caves in the distance, which sort of jars you a bit, but then you realise what it is and you hear the splash of their fins as they drop back into the water.
Isn't that lovely, I say to Davy.
Davy's sort of slip sliding on the rocks up to you.
Oh, I'll hold out my hand for him.
Does he take it? Yeah, I think he does, but sort of in a firm sort of wrist grip kind of way.
Absolutely. There's a bit of manly wrist grabbing going
on. Wrist grabbing action, yeah.
Ah, got you there. Come on, let's get over to the lighthouse. Are you going to be joining me for some fishing, Davy?
Yes, sir. I bought my own rod.
Ah.
Can't miss an opportunity like this.
Fisherman yourself, eh?
Yes. Yes. It is indeed my profession, sir. I don't know whether you will realise that.
Oh, I see, yes. I do apologise. It's perfectly obvious.
Don't get much chance to do line fishing, of course. Mostly nets. Not so much fun.
Yes, I quite agree. It's very relaxing, almost meditative, sitting upon the rocks, with your line out, waiting. Hmm.
So you sort of walk up to the lighthouse. So I think where you've moored was probably the old sort of location, but the steps have sort of fallen away and have been covered in sort of seaweed. So you can sort of roughly see a path up, and yet it has like an old broken down door, and yeah, it's a big, I suppose it's brick, I guess, mostly brick, maybe with some flint. I need to know Whitby's local geology, but
it's totally full of flint, Whitby, I've heard.
Yeah, it's flint all over the place. Yeah, so it's sort of half flint, and then, you know, I don't think it's a particularly big lighthouse. I think it's, as an old lighthouse, it probably looks fairly small. And then, yeah, the rocks sort of spill down into the sea on the other side, where obviously the waves are much more aggressive and sort of crashing towards the lighthouse and the shore.
I think there's a single seagull wheeling around the top of the lighthouse, making its incessant cawing noise as it flies about up there.
Well, Davy, do you know a good spot?
Just down over here, and it's sort of in between the sort of the break of the water. I'm not a fisherman, so I'm guessing. And the sort of quieter bit. There's like, they've obviously tried to put some rocks between where the waves crash and the back of the island where you can kind of moor. And there's a bit there where the fish kind of come in and find it harder to get out. So,
ah, perfect. Let's set ourselves up here, and then well, might be time for a spot of tea. I brought a. Did they have thermoses back then? I feel like a thermos is the sort of thing this character might bring with him, but now it suddenly occurs to me they may not exist yet.
Probably not.
So a quick Google. I don't know if they were commonly available, but they were invented in 1892.
Well, this is my rather spiffy new thermos, which I've acquired.
But thermoses didn't exist till 1904.
What?
You had a vacuum insulated flask.
Ah, thank you. This is my rather spiffy new vacuum. What did you say?
A vacuum insulated flask.
Vacuum insulated flask.
TM.
I acquired it in London. It's rather good. Keeps tea warm for, well, they say, several hours.
Mm.
Would you fancy a spot of tea, Davey?
I'm not much of a tea drinker, but I'll try it as we're here.
Good man.
And he sort of helps you pick out your bait and you sort of set up the fishing rods.
I'm very clear that I know exactly what sort of bait I want. Periodically attempt to sort of forestall Davey being too much of an expert.
Okay. Well, he's very patient with you.
He needs to be. I'm not actually that good at this.
Once you're set up and you're sitting there drinking your tea, you're sort of sitting on your small fold-out fishing seats. When you hear this sort of piercing, like a kind of tinnitus whine coming from within the lighthouse, you know, like the TV sound, the sort of, but obviously you don't know what TV is, but that sound.
What the devil is that? I turn to look at Davey to see if he has heard it.
He's like, I don't know what that is. Yeah, so he can definitely hear it as well.
Is it coming from the lighthouse? Do you think there's somebody up there?
Maybe they've put the light on and something's happened. Do you see up there?
Not from down here, but could we sort of look at him solicitously? Could we go and have a little shufty?
He sort of nods at you, but cautiously.
Ah, good. Do whatever is necessary to secure the rods, if need be, and then let's go and have a look. I think Jonathan is going to head up to the lighthouse and crack open the door and sort of, without trying to appear too cautious, he's going to cautiously make his way inside.
Yeah, so the door does it opens. It looks like what you discover is that somebody has somehow put a rock next to the outside of the door, like there's a hole in the bottom. They've sort of leant it against the door to make it appear like it's shut.
Huh.
But if you pull it, it just sort of, you can pull the rock away and it opens up. As you opened it up, there's a sort of flutter of seabirds that have been sort of nesting in various parts of the abandoned lighthouse. Yeah, so I guess it's a fairly solid structure. There's some broken furniture at the bottom. You know, an old fireplace. I'm trying to muster my memory from the lighthouse, the film. And some stairs that go up. And the noise seems to be coming from up on the next floor. I guess there's a lot of the flooring's given out, so you can probably see up. You can see there's probably maybe two floors.
The stairs look sound?
Yeah, they're like stone stairs that are built, almost built in with the building. So
perfect. Well, then I think Jonathan feels emboldened now by the fact that, you know, the ceiling didn't come crashing down on him or anything weird like that. So he's going to head up the stairs, heedless of whether Davey's keeping up, and call up, is anybody up there? Hello?
There's no response.
There is no response, save for a seagull, which, alarmed by your call, flies out and nearly takes your head off as it exits the lighthouse main door, with a fearsome crying and calling to wake the dead.
Cue some alarmed hand flapping.
Because there is something quite alarming about bird wings flapping all up in your face.
Oh, yeah. It's not nice.
Hitchcock was onto something there.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been such a good film if it had been seagulls, though.
I don't know. I think there are anyway.
Seagulls are pretty vicious.
I think there are. But okay, so you get to the next floor and you see somebody smartly dressed sitting in a chair in front of... I'm going to play my cards at this point.
Righto.
And because there's five of us, I'm going to have to play both cards. For it is a game of cards. Because this is a part one card, so I can only do it now because there's five of us, right?
Yeah, if you're only able to play it when you yourself are narrator, then yes. I think that's right.
Let me just reveal a little bit more information and then I'll reveal the cards, shall I?
Okay.
So they're sitting in this chair. There's a machine that's sort of whirring. There seems to be metal plates sort of gently spinning within this sort of metal cage, an elaborate, ornate metal cage on the table in front of them.
Right. I think there's a sort of a moment of doubt and confusion as he just stares and then says, "Hello? Good morning."
Yeah, Davey sort of says, "Sir, I don't like this. I don't like this one bit." His ever-changing accent.
"Calm yourself, Davey. Everything is absolutely fine. And is this person reacting at all?"
"No."
Then Jonathan is going to boldly step forward until he can see the person's face.
Okay, as you round to the person, I'm now going to play my card.
Woohoo!
Which is, if I can play my card, victim.
Do you want to read that card out?
"During your part one scene as narrator, reveal mutilated, injured, or dead victims. The victim's wound may appear impossible to have been caused by a human."
Aha, uh-huh. And that allows you to ignore the human safety rule.
Nice. Yes.
Love it. Love it.
I'm going to play my clue as well, which is technology. So could include an advanced computer, a novel computer program or virus, a device with unusual mechanisms for the current era, a device that seems to exceed current technology, a strange device of unknown function. So as you walk up to the man, he seems smartly dressed, gentleman with a sort of moustache, but what's most obvious is that there is blood pouring from his nose, eyes and ears. And he seems to be holding an elaborate key in one hand. But the most startling thing of all is that he looks like he's got a face of contentment.
Wow. Do we end the scene there, do you think? Or...
yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you.
I think it's scary because you don't get contented faces in cosmic horror very often. So I thought I'd throw that in there.
That is quite right. So, now that you have revealed your clue and finished the scene, we have the witness that has to describe their fears and rationalisations. And I will just read this out from the rules, I think, so that we're all clear on what that involves.
It's tricky with a special card, isn't it, so early on?
Well, yeah.
I don't think I've played one this early on before.
That's a punchy start to the story. Yeah, after the scene has concluded, the witness candidly speaks their fears and rationalisations out loud as the main character, as though thinking out loud. They say what the main character's fears are, responding to the events of the chapter, and try to rationalise away those fears as much as they can. The witness's fears and rationalisations could be a monologue to camera, a letter written to a loved one, or a diary entry. I think it will be... this is really tricky. Before you did all this, I was thinking, oh, I'll write a postcard to my auntie or something. And now I'm like, I'm not writing that, Jesus. So probably a diary entry, I guess. I returned back from the lighthouse venture feeling deeply disturbed. I had sought to spend a pleasant morning engaging in a sport that I have lost touch with and hope to reconnect with, perhaps enjoy some conversation with the local man who had brought me there. But instead, I found myself faced with something so bizarre that I hesitate to write it down for fear of being thought to be insane. What was the meaning of the wounds on the body that I found in the lighthouse? What was the strange device? And what is the meaning of the key that he held? None of it makes any sense. But I suppose these seaside towns do attract strange people. And perhaps that's all that is happening here. Someone, a disturbed individual, came to the lighthouse to end their life. And as for the strange device, perhaps some new invention. It has left me feeling very unsettled. I fear I shall not sleep well tonight. That's the end of my fears and rationalisations. And now we have to complete leaping to conclusions. So I'm going to put in play the leaping to conclusions rule. Kapow! After each scene, secretly invent and write down an idea for the truth behind the clues.
Good luck, everybody.
That explains the clues, says who or what is behind it all, says what they're doing, and says why they're doing it, and or what their end game is. Always use your conclusions to inspire the clues you introduce in scenes. So, we're each going to secretly write that down. And yeah, like Ed says, good luck with that. That was
tough one. Sorry about that.
No, I like it. I'm going to have to think hard.
I've just opened up my notes and the top note was a Lovecraft esque from a previous.
Nice.
I suspect if I go into my direct messages to myself in Slack, yep, exactly the same. It's just a whole bunch of notes.
Oh, don't forget, by the way, to write down the clue, Ed, if you haven't already. I'm sure you probably have. Yes, you've already done it. But I will mention it for the benefit of the listener. Once you've got your clues, you write them down so everyone's clear on what the clue is. In this case, hard not to notice it.
Gosh, I'm writing a flipping novel to explain this, Ed.
Sorry.
No, I like it. It's fine.
I am done with my conclusions.
Me too, sort of.
Me three.
Don't worry, I've got this all figured out. Yeah, so it's sweet. Fine.
Me too, actually. I found it surprisingly easy.
I'm sure it won't get more convoluted.
I can't see how it could. Well, now that I've worked it out, I'm sure all the clues are going to conform with my theory.
Absolutely.
Who's going to be doing the next clue?
I think it's me.
And I think that means I'm the next witness. Is that right?
That is what it means, yes. Well, did you want to ask a question though, Nick?
I was going to ask a question. I did. So I was so busy trying desperately to leap to conclusions in my head. Did we explain the purpose of leaping to conclusions for folks who are listening?
Well, maybe partly. So the idea of leaping to conclusions is that it provides a sort of connective tissue between the clues of different people. We don't discuss what the clues mean amongst ourselves, but when you get to be narrator, you've always got an idea of what the clues mean, and therefore a good idea of what your next clue should be, and ultimately by the end of the game we'll have hopefully each a clear idea of what we think the denouement should be. Is that what you had in mind, Nick?
Yeah, it just means that when you get to the end you already have a coherent picture that conforms with the clues.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely worth doing it, you know. If anyone's playing it and thinks of skipping it, it's a very valuable step to do it.
Yeah. Or if anyone was thinking of inventing some other GM-less mystery game, you know, maybe don't take out that mechanic.
It's pretty fundamental, I feel.
There's a bunch of people who fucking done it and it really makes me cross every time.
No, I think it is a really valuable thing. And also, it's at the end, to share each other's theories is a really fun bit of like a, you know, like almost like you do at the end of a parlor game or whatever. You can do that as you share each other's theories or whatever. It's good. It's a good little end of session thing to do.
I think so. I think it's the best bit. It's my favourite bit when you get to the end and you're all like, "The clues did what in your version of reality?"
Thank you for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Lovecraft Esk Second Edition by Josh Fox and Becky Anderson. Lovecraft Esk will be coming to a crowdfunding platform near you later this year. You can also find the first edition on blackarmada.com, and if you'd like to keep an eye out for the second edition, you may want to sign up to the Black Armada mailing list. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. See you next time.
Evelyn War Story as a palate cleanser?
A war story as a palate cleanser?
No, I have an Evelyn War Story. Did everybody see that Evelyn, the house that Evelyn War wrote Brideshead Revisited in, went up for sale recently?
Oh, no, I hadn't seen that.
And they were asking 21 million sterling for the house.
Whoa.
There was no photos of the interior.
That's a bit dodgy.
There were no photos of the interior because the current tenants were not letting anyone in to take photos, and were refusing to leave, and any potential buyers were, it was recommended that they seek legal advice before they make an offer.
For 21 wow. million?
Yeah.
Wow.
What a hefty discount for that.
I mean, you'd try and climb in the window, wouldn't you, surely?
Well, you would probably go and buy someone else's house. You know, I don't know, Rudyard Kipling or somebody. Somebody where the tenants aren't trying to stay there.
I want to know who these tenants are.
Yeah.
They claim in squatters' rights, which are very weedy these days, aren't they, compared to what they used to be?
Yeah, it's not like 1970s, where if you squatted somewhere long enough, it became yours.
Yeah.
I thought that was wild. It did sell, too.
So wow.
Someone was brave enough.
For the 21 million?
I think actually slightly more than that. I think it was...
For 21 million, you can pay a million to for a security clean team sure. to kind of clear
someone
it
just
out.
Just come and break their legs. It's, yeah, no yeah. problem.
It's funny, actually, Evelyn Waugh, Alexis Sale's podcast, it turns out he's an Evelyn Waugh super fan, and he had
wow.
two of the Evelyn Waugh biographers that have been working on the new Penguin books on, and he was chatting to them about it all. It was very surreal. But,
has he got a first edition t-shirt though, signed by Evelyn Waugh?
No.
It says Evelyn Waugh superfan on it.
No, he doesn't. He's probably not really. He's just talking. He's really, all talk and yeah. no trousers. Whereas
that's
real
superfans. Typical Alexis Sale, that.
Yeah. Talk. No revolution.
Alexis Sale, would you like to sponsor our podcast? It's personal to ask.
I used to watch a lot of Alexis Sale when I was a mid-teenager, I think. Mm. Must have been in my mid-teens.
It's a very interesting podcast. Sometimes I'm very much in the mood for it, and other times it's a bit too eclectic.
He's a bit of an intellectual, isn't he, Alexis Sale? Like... Mm.
Didn't he learn... Is it Alexis Sale who played Hitler in something once
almost
and for a scene had to sign Hitler's name and so learnt Hitler's signature?
Really? What, for like a comic strip or something?
It was a joke. I mean, it was a... Uh-huh. He was not... Well, I think.
He's definitely played Mussolini in The Young Ones.
Hang on. Yeah. If it weren't a joke, Nick, what would that mean? That Alexis Sale actually is Hitler?
No, I meant it wasn't a serious role in which he wasn't playing Hitler seriously.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
probably.
He looks more like Mussolini though, definitely. slash the head of the police force, as I remember.
I just remember.
He's got a great song about revolutionary biscuits.
I remember he did a Waiting for Godot sketch where three of them come along at once.
We've got the Trotsky revolutionary assortment. Yeah, it's quite interesting. He also, if you want to follow that thread before we get back on track, he was interviewed by Owen Jones, and he was very sniffy about Owen Jones. But when he found out that Owen Jones' parents were Trotskyists, and he obviously was, I think they're Bolsheviks, his family. So they were like that sort of implosion of the super left of like Trotsky's versus Bolsheviks was on display. Very odd. It was a very icy interview.
How many of our listeners will understand the slightest thing about this if I put it in the sticker? Be like, Trotskyists, yes.
Do you want to explain Trotskyists and Bolsheviks to...
And Gramsci, because he had a completely different way of looking at it as well, didn't he? Or are we going too far down there?
No, I need to get my book out, my big book. I'll probably get a letter from
this
saying, no, I'm not a Bolshevik.
The I Spy book of...
Yes, bluff your way in communism.
I studied Russian revolutionary history when I was in my late teens. And I wrote one of my A-level papers on the difference between the tenets of Marxism and how Lenin implemented it.
Did that
for which I got an A.
Explanation of what the difference between a Trotskyite and a...
No, I didn't do too much in the way of Trotsky. I did more.
So it's Bolsheviks and Mensheviks, wasn't it?
Something like that. Yeah, it's quite a long time ago that I did it.
Okay. Anyway.
Anyway.
I digress.
I can tell the sting is for this session. Fucking something else.
Sorry.
No.
Ed is just like raising the tone.
And people are going to be like, "What's this? Who is this guy?"
I feel, yeah, like you say, like Holly raising the book up about play, how to learn to play to chess, bluff your way in communism.